Yeah, sorry, no intro music for today's episode as I actually migrated to a new computer and I'm having a hard time actually locating that original music file, but I didn't want to waste time trying to find it. I'd rather just spend that time trying to publish this episode so that you can listen in on this conversation. So my apologies, and hopefully I'll get the music intro for you on the next episode. Okay, so this is a kind of a special episode about the No Surprises Act, which is effective actually January 1st of this year. And the No Surprises Act is meant to be a what they call a consumer protection law. And I think in general that's a good thing. It's supposed to promote more transparency. And so basically what it is, it's kind of, it comes in two parts. And I think the first part applies more to facilities, you know, like hospitals and like inpatient clinics. Mm. So it won't really apply to my situation where I'm a solo practitioner. It's the second part of the No Surprises Act that I want to speak more to, and I think more of the people who listen to this podcast are those who are working either in a group outpatient agency or they're by themselves. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the No Surprises Act, but I also wanted to have my wife to be a special guest. Jennifer Hsu is my very special guest today to serve as somewhat of a sounding board, because you're a consumer. You're listening to my explanation of mm-hmm. this act from a consumer's point of view, and so I think it'd be good to have me be able to sort out some of my thoughts and my opinions about this with you, and to hear from you how this act feels for you. And then even as you provide some of your opinions and as you even ask some questions, it might be good for me and hopefully some of the listeners to think through this as well for their own practice. So I'll give you the main points of the second part of the No Surprises Act, and that is basically that they want the therapist to provide what's called a good faith estimate. Okay, so this is so that the client doesn't have any weird surprise charges. When I heard a workshop on this, it was a really good workshop from semi-private practice, and on that workshop there was a healthcare attorney and he runs a very large MFT practice, and so they were giving the audience some education about it. And Jennifer Smith, who was the healthcare attorney, she gave a good example of her husband who had to have a colonoscopy, and they were in network with insurance at their hospital, but then they get hit later on with a bill from the lab that bill was $2,000. Mm-hmm. That's for additional work of, you know, kind of like taking certain specimens from the colonoscopy and examining it and then, you know, just running some tests with that. So that wasn't part of their actual colonoscopy budgeting, right? So Jennifer Smith and the husband and the insurance and whatever, they were able to settle. But that's an example of why regulations like this were created in the first place. So, you know, in my practice and in many of the practices of therapists out there, we state what the fee is, but then I think what happens sometimes is that the client may lose track, I guess, of how much they're paying for therapy. And I think what the law wants us to do is to provide for the clients a good faith estimate. It's basically saying, I think your treatment with this particular diagnosis will take about 6 months. I think your treatment may take 9 months, whatever it is. And at my rate, this is what you can expect to be paying at the end of 9 months. And sometimes the client may say, you know what, that's actually too much for me. I don't want to be paying that much. And they may reject all that. And so, but, you know, that's kind of like if you were to go to a procedure with, you know, a medical doctor, and you're saying, how much will this cost me? And they give you the estimate up front, and then you could say, okay, well, yes, I want to go through with this, or I don't want to go through with this. They're trying to make this be something that mental health professionals do as well for their clients. So there's a lot of things within the good faith estimate. There's some details there that I'm not going to go into. The purpose of today's episode is really just to kind of talk through the philosophy of it. And, you know, if the listeners want to hear and, you know, go into more of the details of the Good Faith Estimate and the No Surprises Act, maybe they can, you know, view the same workshop that I did. I'll give links to that in the show notes. But I wanted to just kind of camp there a little bit. And as you hear me explain the Good Faith Estimate, as the consumer, how do you feel about that?
So I really was a consumer of therapy. I did go consistently for about a year every week. And when I first started, you know, this law wasn't in effect yet. But I think if my therapist had told me at my rate every week that it would cost you, say, $5,000, I would be in for a sticker shock. I think not having ever gone through therapy before, I would feel like that's a real turnoff, a big deterrent. I don't even know what therapy is about. I've never been through counseling. I don't know what to expect. I don't know what the benefits are. And already I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, it's not like a medical procedure where, you know, it's necessary. I need to get my gallbladder removed. I know I need to do it. That's why I don't feel like this analogy is a fair one. It's
with the colonoscopy,
right? Mm-hmm. It's not a mental health. Sure, it's necessary, but there's this emotional component to it that's not being accounted for by just giving me this sticker. You know, a lot of people don't go to therapy because they think, oh my gosh, it's so expensive. But if I need to do a colonoscopy, like I'm willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think it's a fair comparison. I think it's kind of a disservice to people who are on the edge of considering counseling. I just feel like it, I understand it's trying to protect the consumer, but it's a pity. I feel like it's a turnoff. And also as a client or, you know, a potential client, I would be myself, I would feel the pressure of trying to resolve my problem within these 6 months, right? I don't know. I just feel like there's this ticking clock that's telling me, oh my gosh, I got to resolve my problem within 6 months. But life happens, you know?
Yeah.
Things might resolve quickly, more quickly than anticipated, or some life event might happen, and that might require a few extra sessions. And so I understand as a therapist, you might give the disclaimer, you know, this is only an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it's so, it's not really helping me because I might go 10 sessions over. I might only need to see you for 2 months. Like just as you get to know the client and their issues, I don't know. I feel like it's boiling down counseling to this price tag when there's so much more value than just, okay, your counseling is going to cost $2,000.
Do you think it'd be better if, so let's say that the good faith estimate never existed.
Mm-hmm.
is it better to just kind of put, for the from a consumer's point of view, is it better to just have your credit card be put on auto? You know, like to have the therapist just run your credit card each session. Let's say it's $150 per session. And it's kind of nebulous, like how long this treatment may go. For the client, is it better to go that way so that you don't have that sticker shock, but then you just know that when you get your monthly credit card bill, it's like, oh, crap, you know, like I have like $600, you know, on this. And then, but then it's almost like lulling, kind of like lulling the client to just keep on going.
I mean, you yourself tell clients, like, my goal is not for you to be in therapy forever, right? A good therapist's goal is to work himself out of a job. You don't want there to be, you know, a therapy to be a crutch for the client. So in that sense, I think the client can trust the therapist will tell them, like, you know, I think we can decrease your frequency, based on, you know, your progress or your financial needs. Maybe we can only see each other like twice a month versus every week. I don't know. I guess I'm different because I would myself keep a spreadsheet. You know, I knew how many times I had gone. Maybe this is really to protect those consumers who are just, I don't know, not keeping track of their expenses. I mean, I think responsible adults know that therapy is an investment. And so why would it be a sticker shock if I'm coming four times a month? You know,
like, so psychologically then, it's more palatable to be paying $500 to $600 a month on your credit and see that on your credit card statement than to see $7,500 as the upfront cost. Like that's psychologically too big of a hurdle to overcome.
Exactly. Because I might not end up needing to see you for 6 months. Maybe I'm only gonna see you for 3 months, and instead of being told $6,000, then that's only like maybe half the cost. I think what is helpful though, for anyone who's going to therapy for the first time, like they want to know, like, do I need to be in therapy forever? Or do I only need to see you for half a year? So I think what would be helpful for me, is, you know, after having discussed all my issues with you, can you tell me, like, how long do you think I need to be in therapy for? Or like, how long do I need to come see you? Because then anyone can do the simple math, right? 6 months at twice a month times the hourly rate. Like, that's easy for me to figure out. Because actually, I think I should have asked that question myself, looking back on my on my therapy days, right? I mean, I was in crisis, so I was just looking forward to that, like, every week. But I think in hindsight, I should have asked the therapist, like, hey, you know, do you think my, I don't know. It's hard though, because life happens. A therapist doesn't have a crystal ball to predict how you're going to do. So
One of the presenters, she was saying that yes, you can do the calculations yourself, as the therapist can do the calculations and present them, or, you know, under the way that the law is written, you can do the breakdown. Four sessions per month at
$150
each session. And not do the calculations for the client so that maybe psychologically they can sort of...
It's more digestible.
It's more digestible. So again, you know, if that's what some of the therapists want to do until they actually rewrite, until they amend that law to say, no, you must do the calculations and present them in full to the client, then maybe that's a little loophole that you can do to kind of overcome that psychological hurdle. Because for you, if you were to see the breakdown in that way and not do the calculations right then and there, it's almost like when you're paying the interest for a house or you are paying, you know, payments for a car, when you see like just how much you're paying for interest for a house, like, holy cow. Mm-hmm. But then when you kind of see it in, like, broken down into smaller installments, mm-hmm. like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So I think monthly versus, like, the lifetime of your time with me is,
yeah.
is a big difference. Like, psychologically, it's a hard hurdle to overcome, like, 10,000 versus monthly payments.
Right.
Right? Even, I think, a car payment, right, over the lifespan of paying off your car, you're going to be paying this much versus
yeah.
like, oh, monthly payments of $300, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's odd because even for, like, medical expenses, you know, I took Audrian for the x-ray, and even with insurance, I asked them, oh, how much will I be billed? And she said, to be honest, I don't know. Mm. But I still needed to get the x-ray for her because her doctor requested it.
Hmm.
So, like, I don't understand why...
Maybe they're not in compliance with the law themselves.
Because I said, can you call the insurance? And she said, no, I'm not sure how much this will cost. Maybe a couple hundred. Do you still want it?
And what? That's not...
Yeah. And that's, like, in a legit medical
yeah.
hospital, right?
Yeah, right.
So, I just feel like... I don't know. This is, it feels like a big hurdle or a deterrent for mental health, like from my perspective.
For sure, this is going to add a big strain to therapists.
Yeah.
Because under this new law, you do have to ask the questions not only to the new client, well, how to phrase this. You definitely have to bring this up to all existing clients. But for new potential clients, mm-hmm. even if they call you on the phone asking about your services and they ask you, hey, how much do you think this will cost? It's the burden is now placed upon us to even think of a diagnosis for them.
Right, and that's not
without
fair.
Even meeting them.
Exactly.
And then we have to say, well, this might take this long, and if we're required by law to ask them whether they want us to provide a written estimate.
And of course the person's going to say, oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they may never even become our client.
Exactly.
And so, but we still need to do that.
And that's a lot of time and effort on your part.
It is. Yeah. It is. And so I wonder whether this will get amended sometime in the future. But for now, we actually have to comply with that. And, you know, I don't think they're going to do a witch hunt on the mm-hmm. therapist anytime soon. But if in the off chance that we are audited sometime this year mm-hmm. or next year, we would have to show them that we put in decent effort to comply with this law as soon as possible. So this increases the administrative burden
yeah.
on therapists, because what we were required to do prior to this law being passed is to let them know what the fee is per session
mm-hmm.
and to just kind of give them an idea of how long we think this treatment plan might take. But that's about it. You know, and then they're mm-hmm. with that information, they now have the ability to say yes or no to, you know, to consent to treatment. But now it, you know, we're now sending PDFs through mm-hmm. HIPAA compliance about this estimate. They may not even become our client.
Yeah.
So again, like from the consumer's point of view, from the client's point of view, you're thinking that this act actually dissuades especially those who are kind of venturing out into therapy
yeah,
for the first time.
Exactly. Borderline. Like, should I do it? Should I not?
Yeah. This might make them do some... I think you were mentioning before that this might make them become price shoppers.
Exactly. They're going to become bargain hunters. Well, this person says they can help me with my problem in 3 months at this lower rate versus somebody else who says, oh, I might need 6 months. Well, then of course I want my problem solved at 3 months. I can save money, right? Then it becomes like... almost like nickel and diming, and they're really losing out on the value of an entire, I don't know, like a holistic treatment versus just chopping around and doing it in the least amount of time possible.
Yeah. Even though you are about efficiency.
Yeah. I don't know. Talking about it, it kind of annoys me. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's unfortunate that potential people really needing therapy might be weeded out because of the sticker shock.
That's good. I'm glad that, you know, we can have a discussion that's based on how a consumer might view this. You know, because even though the intent of this was to actually protect the consumer.
But I might be... I might be the exception. Maybe other people think, okay, this therapist is telling me, you know, $8,000 for the year, then I'm going to allot my budget around that. Yeah. So that's the flip side, right?
That is the flip side. That's
so,
right. And, you know, let's say that there's someone who budgeted some money and then they say, well, okay, let me backtrack a little bit. It might make them say, if I'm going to be spending that much money for this issue, I better put in my work.
Holds them accountable, right?
Right.
Holds them accountable.
If the therapist says, hey, I recommend that you read this book alongside our treatment.
Right.
And that's the way for them to really supplement. Like, they might say, this is bang for the buck.
Yeah, they better do their homework.
They may do their homework. Yeah. But then if they realize, like, I'm just bleeding money here and I'm not doing any work, then...
That's true.
You know, that might... And I think this might make... Put a fire under some therapists who've been sort of like... just sort of cruising.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They might say, you know what? I am charging this client this much money for this amount of time. I better put in my A game to make sure that, you know, I'm doing everything possible to help them accomplish their goals within this amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see how this can benefit, but I'm glad that you brought up your take about the sticker shock for some people who...
I'm thinking of the borderline, never been in counseling. Not
that's
talking
right.
about
which
the,
is most people, I think.
Yeah, not talking about the super committed. You know, like I understand the benefits of therapy. Like I'm all here.
Yeah.
You know, I just remember my first time even calling up the therapist. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know what to expect, and if in that 20-minute free consultation she told me, and by the way, expect to pay $10,000,
right.
I'd be like, I'm in crisis. I'm not thinking about $10,000, you know, it just kind of adds to...
No, that's true. Because, you know, a good percentage of my clients are betrayed partners.
Yeah, they're in crisis.
They're in crisis. And if I tell them, you know...
And on top of that,
on top of what you're going through, you know, you can expect to pay $5,000 or whatever.
It's just another slap in the face.
Yeah.
It's like you're already down. It's not that you're trying to deceive them, but it's like... I really think a therapist trying to estimate how long you need therapy for, like, that just seems arbitrary.
Mm.
Like, how do you know how somebody's going to respond to treatment, right?
That's true.
Like, they might have, I don't know, it seems really arbitrary. You could just make up something.
Yeah.
It just seems like you guys are all spinning wheels to provide a number that has huge margin for error.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, that's true, because, like... again, I'm no doctor, but, you know, let's say you have a broken finger and, you know, you ask the doctor, you know, how long will, you know, once I set this cast or whatever, this splint, how long is this expected to heal? And they say, well, yeah, you know, 9 out of 10 cases is going to be about a 8-week sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no emotions involved.
Exactly.
There's no dynamic between the doctor and the patient.
Right.
It's just you set that cast.
It's a physical thing. Yeah.
And then, you know, 9 out of 10 people will have that.
Most people will respond in this way.
Exactly. But
for
therapy,
right? Yeah.
For therapy, there's a lot of dynamics involved that are fluid and that don't go the way physiology goes.
Right. And there's like outside actors, not just about my healing, but there's other people involved in my life that are also hurting or helping you know, my healing process. So I just feel like you giving me a good faith 6-month estimate, like, doesn't really mean anything. And if it's a first-time client, then they're going to be holding on to that 6 months, right?
That's true.
Like, you know, what's wrong with me? I already went through 6 months of counseling. I did all my homework, but yet I still don't feel like I'm ready to graduate.
Yeah.
And then I feel even worse about myself, right?
That's a really good point. Yeah, because under this act, the therapist would need to revisit this estimate and say, you know what, this is taking slower than I thought.
Yeah, and then it makes me feel like, oh no, 6 months. Like I'm already a betrayed partner and here I am, I'm not doing well in therapy. It's like, oh my gosh. So it just, right. I don't know, as I talk it out, it just doesn't seem realistic or practical.
Yeah. And yet we have to do it.
I don't know.
That's what we have to follow.
That's
why
I feel like healthcare, it doesn't equate exactly to their mental health therapy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's more complex for mental health.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, I appreciate you joining this discussion. I think it's really helpful. And maybe I will have you on again.
Thanks.
That was my lovely wife, Jennifer Hsu, and so grateful for her. I gained a lot more insight just by talking it through with her. And like I mentioned earlier, this No Surprises Act and the Good Faith Estimate portion of the act, there are details to this that I won't get into today. Also, you know, this the information that was shared in this podcast episode does not constitute any sort of legal advice. This is more for opinion sharing and educational purposes, but in no way am I claiming to have giving legal advice in this area. So if you do want to get more of a deep dive into the No Surprises Act, you could take a look at the link that I'll provide in the show notes. It's a recorded webinar from Semi Private Practice, and they can give you more of the details that I cannot provide. Okay, well, I hope that was helpful for you to listen to the conversation between myself and my wife. And if you have any questions, you can go to the newtherapistfaq.com website and you can submit your questions there. Thanks a lot.